as Russians head to the polls this weekend, we're asking who they're supporting for president and why.
When in future my great-grandchildren would ask me, what did you do living in those times? I would say I voted for a person whom I trusted.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Join me in Moscow for a preview of the presidential election and why it matters. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, every day at 4 p.m. on KTOO.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, U.S. Consul General for the Russian Far East Michael Keyes compares U.S. relations with Russia today with how we stood in the 1990s when he was stationed in Moscow for the Juneau World Affairs Council. This is America and the World follows at 9:30, and Gavel Alaska's daily legislative coverage is back at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Juneau afternoon on this Friday afternoon that feels a lot like spring here in Juneau. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And today we're going to be talking to storyteller Pete Griffin. He's the featured speaker at the Friday Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center tonight. Jordan Nigro will be here to talk to us about the activities at Zach Gordon Youth Center. We're going to be talking to Jane Lindsay about her 14-year career at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. We're going to hear about the Blarney Bash happening this weekend, and we'll find out about this weekend's health fair. That's all coming up, bird note, music, and more. First, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans have a long tradition of decorated military service, but due to a gap in federal law, many veterans are not eligible to receive memorials of their service. As Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, lawmakers are working to change that.
A bipartisan bill passed the Senate that seeks to fix a technical problem that overlooks Native American veterans and prevents them from being able to receive a headstone from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Montana Democratic Senator John Tester is heading up the effort, and he says it's about fairness and honor.
Native Americans join the service at a higher level than any other minority. The fact is that they deserve to have the benefits of service.
Currently, families of tribal veterans can receive the gravestones if the veteran is being buried in cemeteries managed by the state or the federal government, but not the 11 cemeteries across the country managed by tribal governments. The bill that clarifies that discrepancy is now awaiting consideration in the House before it makes its way to the president's desk. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
New training aims to improve the way research is conducted in American Indian and Alaska Native communities. As Daisha Eaton reports, the curriculum is now available through the University of Washington.
The training is trying to prevent harm that academic research can cause to Indigenous people.
If you go back to the early research that's been conducted with tribes and read about how people are depicted, they're really dehumanized and devalued and stigmatized as a result. And over the years, that hasn't really changed all that much.
That's Myra Parker, assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Washington School of Medicine. She's also Mandan and Hidatsa from the Fort Berthold Reservation in North Dakota. Parker says existing training didn't take into consideration important factors such as harm or risk from the perspective of Indigenous communities and tribal sovereignty, but the new training does. There's a long track record of Indigenous people being included in research without fully informed consent. Some researches caused physical harm or emotional trauma, while other research created stigma, like the 1979 Barrow Alcohol Study.
With the Barrow Alcohol Study, basically what people came away with was that Alaska Natives, you know, have a problem with alcohol, but it wasn't from a constructive perspective. It was from a stigmatizing perspective and resulted in a lot of discrimination.
Parker helped produce the curriculum with Cynthia Pearson, associate professor at the University of Washington School of Social Work, who says they consulted Indigenous community members, scholars, and non-Native allies to create the training.
Basically, what our expert panel said was, why don't we just go back to the guidelines that are governing the research and then let's interpret it from an Indigenous perspective.
Research about the new training was recently published in the peer-reviewed academic journal, Critical Public Health. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Menominee Nation of Wisconsin has filed a lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors, alleging their responsibility for an opioid addiction epidemic impacting the tribal community. The complaint was filed in federal court against six companies seeking financial responsibility. The Wisconsin tribe is the latest tribe to take action against drug makers and distributors. Tribes in South Dakota and Oklahoma have filed similar lawsuits. Native leaders in Canada continue to call for a public investigation into the death of Tina Fontaine, the Indigenous teenager who went missing and was later found dead in a river in 2014. Last month, a not guilty verdict in her case sparked anger across First Nations in Canada. This week, the Manitoba government said it would not hold an official investigation into her death. The CBC reports Native leaders were quick to respond, calling for further examination. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support for this program comes from Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More information can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD with Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
And welcome back to June Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host for today, and Pete Griffin has joined me. Pete, thanks so much for coming in. Always great to see you.
Great to be here, Andy.
Yeah. Pete, you're well known as someone who was on the radio so often with Tongass Trails, that great radio kind of series where you talked about your travels around the woods and things that happened and those kinds of things. But you've retired from that for a little while here.
I have. The last one was broadcast in 2004. That was 14 years ago. And people still stop and ask me, hey, you retired. Are you going to go back on the radio?
That's funny. It's been 14 years. Oh, my goodness. I am dating myself there.
I was much younger then.
But you have obviously such a wonderful way of telling stories. You had such a beautiful radio voice. So I'm sure that's people... I'm sure you get that thing where people just meet you in the store and they go, are you on the radio? Do I know your voice?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, folks will say, oh, I'm scratching my head. I heard you speak and I knew exactly who you were.
Isn't that funny? So what have you – we'll talk a little bit about what you're going to talk about tonight. You're at the Fireside Lecture Series at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and those shows are at 6:30 and 8 o'clock, so you got two chances to hear Pete's stories this evening. But what have you been up to since people last heard you in 2004 on the air?
Well, after I retired in 2010, I had this dream of retirement of just fishing and hunting.
Yes.
Well, that doesn't work out. You have to do something else besides fishing and hunting. So I put a lot more time into storytelling. And so I've been to a lot of conferences and workshops, and I go – when I travel, I'll send out a letter to all the libraries ahead of time, say, hey, I'm going to be in town, and if you're interested, here are some of the stories that I do. If you're interested, let me know, and we'll work something out.
What sort of stuff are people most interested in hearing about from you?
Well, a lot of folks down south like to hear stories about Alaska.
Sure, yeah.
Alaska has such an image down south. So folks want to hear about Alaska. Now, folks, where I grew up in the Midwest, they seem to like to want to hear stories about growing up back in the 50s and 60s in that section of the country. And a lot of folks just say, hey, you know, give us a mix.
Sure.
So that's what I'll do. I'll give them a mix of those stories.
Do you find yourself attracted to telling one over the other, or do you go through certain periods where you've kind of are working in one genre or another?
Yeah, every once in a while I'll have a project. 2 years ago, I got a grant, a Rasmussen grant, individual artist grant, and I spent several months working on Forest Service career stories that culminated in a performance for 360 North that was recorded and broadcast.
Right, I remember that, and that was kind of profiling different people who had done different things in the Forest Service.
Oh, that was essentially it was stories from my own career.
From your own career, okay,
yes.
Okay,
yeah,
so different parts of your. When I was doing this for the Forest Service and kind of profiling that time in your life.
Yeah. How I kind of grew up in the Forest Service
right. And
ended up where I am today.
Yeah, interesting. So, and it must be fun to be able to travel around, do that kind of work, talk to people.
You know,
right?
for an introvert, it's really strange, but I do enjoy that for limited periods of time.
Right. Have you had like some weird experiences? Get to a place and look around and don't know where you're at, kind of.
Every once in a while, I'll be standing somewhere on a stage wondering, how did I get here? When I went back to my high school, I gave a talk for an assembly. All the kids in school in the gymnasium, and I'm looking out over that crowd, and I've got this podium. I said, you know, in the seventh grade, I was standing in behind this very podium, hanging on for dear life, reading a speech that I could hardly squeak out, and it's a good thing I had the podium there because people couldn't see my knees knocking.
Right.
And, of course, they all laughed, but that was the truth.
Yeah.
So every once in a while I go, how did I end up here after dreaming of a job out in the woods where I never had to talk to another person?
So is that what maybe transformed you and made you want to tell these stories, gave you the courage to talk to people about these stories, was the time alone? Or how was it that you felt like, how did you get there from being someone who... The last thing on earth you wanted to do is talk to people to someone who's, you know, really renowned for it.
That's an interesting story. It's kind of an origin story, and that's a story that I'm going to tell tonight.
Oh, okay.
I used to write essays, and my teachers would go, oh, that's a wonderful essay. You know, I'd write them in 5 minutes before class. Oh, you must have worked all week on this. Well, no. So getting that kind of feedback. In Ketchikan, I started reading essays on the air or recording essays, just me and a microphone, and that morphed into Tongass Trails, where I learned how to write the way I spoke. And when I read those, it was as though I was having a conversation with somebody, but I was just having a conversation with the microphone. And that and the fact that I told a story... the folks in Ketchikan just loved that. And that is one of the stories I'll be telling tonight.
Well, it was so memorable. I'm count me as one of the people that wants it to come back as well. But you're kind of going to play on that a little bit for the Fireside Lecture. This one you're calling Beyond Tongass Trails.
That's right. Beyond Tongass Trails. That which has happened to me essentially since I've retired. Been a lot of places in the state, done a lot of hunting in the interior and the Aleutians and here in southeast Alaska. And I've also spent some time in the Southwest. I did an artist in residence down at Bandelier National Monument with the National Park Service for a month in 2016. I sent them a CD of my tales from Alaska. Natural history stuff, and they just love that. Say, hey, come down with us for a month, do some stories for us, and it was a great experience. Living for 30 days in an ecosystem where water is so precious and so rare, it was wonderful.
Yeah, all the organisms there are built to take maximum advantage of the little water they get, right?
That's right.
And a lot of
little animals down there don't drink water at all. It's just an amazing ecosystem, and people living in the cliffs that were excavated, and I learned so much in that 30 days there.
I'm gonna take Alaska out of this equation because I was gonna ask you what your favorite part of the country that you've been able to travel in is. So maybe besides Alaska, which I'm guessing might be your favorite part of the country of like where you get to interact with nature. But other than that, what are some of your favorites that you've been able to do?
Every part of the country that I have been to has something about it that's alluring. Oh, the desert Southwest and the high desert. That's such neat country and such different species.
Yeah, Edward Abbey land down there, right?
Yeah, I'd never seen a tarantula before. So I saw one crossing the road. I swerved the car, pulled over, and jumped out with my camera. I probably frightened it half to death, but I was taking pictures of it as low as I could get. It was a male tarantula because in the fall, the male tarantulas go out and they look for females for mating. Because apparently they don't have eHarmony or Tinder.
Right.
So they're on the move and putting themselves at risk of tourists going, hey, there's a spider. Let's get out and take a picture.
Well, in Tinder, they can swipe left with all eight legs.
Yeah, there you go. and other parts of the country, you know, where I grew up in the Midwest, the Great Lakes, what an ecosystem there.
Sure, beautiful.
And they've all got bird species that live in those spots that you may not see anywhere else. So
and have you seen changes in your lifetime of being outdoors in these areas?
Oh, sure. The places I grew up hunting and fishing no longer exist. They're subdivisions now. So that's the way it is everywhere. Now, when I came to Alaska, I haven't seen like those significant changes yet. But I told somebody when I first moved to Juneau in 1999. There were like only a dozen stoplights, dozen traffic lights, and I started counting them up the other day and got up into the 20s and just said, you know, there are some changes. There are changes around here.
So the pressures of human beings living in an area.
Sure. Yeah, but right. But what we have here in Alaska that maybe is not so much a factor in the lower 48 is we have so much public land here that those lands will probably always remain public, or for the most part, public. And so if you have a favorite cove that you go out to for crabbing or for hunting, those will still be here 20 years from now.
Yeah. What have you learned? What are some of the things when you think about, boy, I've spent a lot of time outdoors, getting out by myself in the woods, and you've, of course, imparted a lot of what you've learned in the Tongass Trails and the other things you've done. But when you think about sort of themes or overall things that you've kind of learned while in all that time, what are some of the things that come to mind?
That even in the ordinary, there is the extraordinary. There's an amazing story behind everything if you look hard enough. A simple plant, a lichen, two species that coexist. You know, one photosynthesizes and the other helps break down rock, and life is just inexorable. And if you take the time and you explore one thing, look at it closely, and the internet's wonderful for this because you can accumulate a lot of information about a plant or an animal in just a few minutes, whereas, you know, we used to have to go to the encyclopedia and look things up physically, turning pages. And that is probably what I've come away with, is that life is amazing, just amazing, and it's so delicate, and it's so short. We oughtn't waste time. We shouldn't waste time.
Well, thanks. That's a wonderful answer. Thanks, Pete. That's cool to hear. You're going to be doing some more of these great stories tonight. It's going to be happening live at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. The two shows are at 6:30 and then again at 8 o'clock. And always let people know to get there early, especially for the 6:30 show, because these do pack out that room there in the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. But it's a really wonderful arena, really, really nice room
it
to
is.
Be able to speak in.
I used to be in charge of it.
Yeah, I know, right. And you've got some photos, some videos, and things like that to show, as well as the stories that you're going to be telling, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Something to illustrate the stories that I'm telling.
Sounds great. Pete Griffin speaking tonight at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center at 6:30 and 8 o'clock. Pete, thanks so much for coming in, talking to us. Beyond Tongass Trails tonight. It'll be fun to hear again.
Thanks for those great questions,
okay.
Andy.
Okay, thanks, Pete. We'll be right back. Kids, and here to talk a little bit more about kids, Jordan Nigro. Hey, Jordan.
Hi, Andy. Good. How are you?
Jordan runs the Zach Gordon Youth Center, lots going on there as we head into spring and summer, right?
Yeah, we have all sorts of things going on. We have the Easter egg hunt coming up. It's the 34th annual, I think. So
that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, people, so many folks have done it for generations. It's really quite fun to have people come in and register their kids and say, I used to do this when I was their age.
That's a fun thing to think about that has been going on for so long.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty cool.
So where around the grounds or where all
so
do you...
So it's actually out at Thunder Mountain High School.
Okay.
And that happens on Saturday, March 30th from at 10 o'clock. And if you are planning to attend, you can come over to Zach Gordon to register. It's $5 per kid. It's kids 0 to 10. But I will say, don't be late. Like, you got to be there. The hunt starts at 10 o'clock sharp, and we hide, I think, 7,000 eggs. And they get picked up in about 5 minutes. So don't be late.
Right?
Sometimes we have people come, and they're late, and they're, like, super sad because they
sure,
were only
I can
five
imagine.
Minutes late, and they missed the whole thing. So don't be late.
Oh, man.
But we give away, like, there's grand prizes that are bikes and – everybody gets a little goodie when they register, when they come, and yeah, it's
how long does
super
it take
fun.
To put 7,000 eggs out?
Well, we have a lot of helpers. We're very lucky. So, we all get there around 8 in the morning, I think. And yeah, so, but it goes pretty quick. Many hands make light work, as
and
they say.
Are there some that are really well hidden?
Yes.
And some
so
that
they're
are...
hidden in different areas for different ages.
Yes.
So, you know, the real little kids, they're not as hard. But for the older kids, the 8 to 10 group, they're a little harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they
still go quick.
Yeah.
Kids are
they find them.
Kids are crafty. That's right. That's
they
right.
They can find those eggs.
Yep.
Oh, man. I remember doing Easter egg hunts as a little kid. How fun it is.
Yeah. It's fun. And, you know, it is so adorable. Like, the kids come in their little Easter outfits a lot of times, and, oh, man, they're just so cute. I love being there to greet all the kids. We have so much fun.
That's
all
fun.
These adorable little tiny ones. We don't usually see the little tiny ones at the center, you
right.
know. So
right.
it's, like, lots of toddlers, a lot of little toddlers that are so
That's
cute
good.
And excited. The Easter Bunny will be there, of course, and, you know, so, yeah,
That's always
it's lots
a good
of fun.
Experience. Yeah. yeah. The big yellow one?
Pink.
Pink? A pink Easter Bunny?
Our Easter Bunny is pink.
Okay.
Yes.
But it's a good, it's a friendly looking.
It is a friendly, yes. It is not like
you've
the
seen
Donnie
the scary,
Darko
you've
type
seen the,
Easter Bunny. It is a friendly looking Easter Bunny.
I just
bunny.
wanted to check in on that. I
yes, we like to make the children happy, Andy. We like them
we
to have
We don't
want
any nightmares. Okay. Sometimes those Easter Bunny outfits are hard to pull
yes,
off, you
no,
know?
Yes, no, this is a cute one.
Okay. Very
yes. Yes.
Pink Easter Bunny. All right. That's great. Well, what else is happening?
So
you got the Easter egg hunt.
Big yeah. thing that we have going on, that this is the third year we've done this, is our Summer Youth Activity Expo. And we put this together for any providers in town who are doing summer camp activities or any sort of summer activities for kids if it's not camps, but just whatever people have got, whatever organizations have got going on. They can have a booth. And so we do it at Centennial Hall on Saturday, April 7th this year from 10 to 1. And if you're listening and you're a provider who does activities with kids in the summer and you want to make sure you get a booth,
a table, you can shoot me an email. My email address is jnigro, N-I-G-R-O, at juno.org. Or you can give me a call at 586-0456, and I'll send you the form. I've been emailing them out. I think a lot of folks have already gotten them or probably seen them or know they need to get them back to me by the end of the month. And so we have, last year, I think we had, the last couple of years, we've had about between 25 and 30 providers there. It's really great. Families can come and register their kids for all the summer things all in one shot. A lot of folks open their registration. We'll open our summer camp registration that day. And then other organizations, maybe they've already opened, but they save spots out for that. And, you know, last year we printed off calendars for families that had the summer on it. So when they came in the door, they could have a calendar so you can write in, oh, grandma's going to be here these days. I don't need summer camp, but I need them these days, you know, so people can walk around and get their summer all set.
That's
all in
really
one
awesome
place.
To be able to kind of have one-stop shopping like that and really figure it out and plan it out. And then you walk out knowing, taken care of.
That is taken care of. Right. And it's really fun, I think, for the providers, too, because it's rare that we're all in one room together like that with all the stuff that we do. So, like, everybody, you know, can talk to each other and register folks. And it's just, I have really enjoyed it the last two springs. It's just really, it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. So that's great. Well, tell me more that's happening at the youth center itself. What are some of the things that are happening? Are there renovations happening now? Those are kind of done?
No, fortunately, we are not renovating
anything.
You
did all that great
moment.
Work on the kitchen just a couple
yes,
years ago.
Yes, we have a beautiful kitchen that we spend a lot of time cooking in, and the kids are always in there, and we're always in there. It's super fun. We're really busy. You know, we have after school, we have a whole lot of kids that all the schools get out, the ages get out at separate times. So around between 2:30 and 3, we have a whole bunch of Harborview kids come in, and some other schools too, but we have a lot of Harborview kids because it's, you know, the closest kids can walk from Harborview over to us. And then a little later, we have the middle school kids start arriving, and then towards around 4:30, we have a lot of high schoolers start arriving. And, you know, drop-in is free after school any day. Kids can come. You have to be at least 9 years old to be without an adult. But the kids are playing basketball and playing, you know, board games, and we're always learning new board games that the kids are into, so that's fun. We play cards and pool and, you know, just everybody just, there's always lots of stuff going on. We have
planned. There's still a rock climbing wall?
There is
stuff?
A climbing wall, yep. So if kids, we have kids come that like to climb. We do certain climbing, like clinics and stuff. We don't have one going on right now, but if kids want to just come and climb, they can pretty much always do it.
There's a great weight room in the back for athletic kind of stuff and all that. Of course,
and
basketball
we just
in the back.
Finally, because now it's warmed up, the outdoor court is back in action. It tends to get a little icy in the winter as things do around here. But now it's warm enough that we can spray it off and keep it clean without it just turning into ice. And so kids are back playing basketball out there. Otherwise, they've been playing inside. And and then we also have BAM, the after school program in both the middle schools that will go on until the end of the school year.
So you guys run that program
run
in
BAM
the schools?
As well. Yep. And that, you know, always has activities going on. And I didn't actually, on my way over here, I should have. We are at another thing that's going on right now is the Resilience Symposium, which the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition and AEYC put on together. So I walked over here so I didn't grab our flyers for BAM, but we have lots of fun after-school activities. Those are also free in both middle schools, and they happen from 3:05 to 4:30, so kids can catch the activity buses home.
That's a
great place. If you're listening and you're ever, you know, interested in volunteering or doing something with kids, BAM is an excellent opportunity to teach kids something that you want to share with kids.
That was the exact next question I was going to ask, is just how people can get involved in the youth center.
So we have folks that come down and just volunteer at the youth center, and you're welcome to do that. Just come in and see us, and we have a volunteer application and a background check that we do. But and then with BAM, if you more want to do something where, you know, you really like to cook or you really like to do some sort of art activity. The nice thing about BAM is the kids sign up for the activities, so you can teach them a skill in, say, if you want to go every Wednesday for 6 weeks or every Tuesday and Thursday for you know, 4 weeks or whatever. We'll work with you to figure out your schedule. We have people come and teach guitar, or, you know, we do lots of really fun stuff in BAM. And that program really relies on our partner organizations and volunteers. And I will tell you, like, I've done a few BAM activities, and the middle schoolers are so much fun. Like, mm-hmm. they want to be there. They have a great time. It's really fun.
Good. Yeah, cool. A lot of the stuff, it seems like, I go over there, as you know, play mm-hmm. basketball in the summer, and looks like there's always a lot of fun going on.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. I think that is, it can be a little loud.
Sure.
And it's always fun.
Right.
Sometimes I come home from work and I'm like, oh, I just have to go upstairs and lay on my bed for 10 minutes. But it's never because of bad stuff. It's always good stuff. Kids having fun make a lot of noise, as it turns out.
Intensity.
Yes.
Right.
so we have a lot. Yeah, we have a lot of fun. And I think everybody is looking forward to summer.
Yeah. Well, great. Anything else you want to bring
up? No, I think just please join us for the Youth Activity Expo Saturday, April 7th from 10 to 1 if you're listening.
And you were saying the spring break thing is happening, but it's already booked up.
Yes, we do have a spring break camp going on next week, but it's full. So, but we're excited to – we're actually partnering with SAIL for that camp. So we're going to be doing some activities together.
Nice.
We have a lot going on, and everybody, I think we all have a little bit of spring fever right now.
Yes. That's true.
The kids have it. We have it. Yep.
All right. Jordan Nigro from the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Thanks so much for updating us on what's going on over there. All right. Coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. We often think of spring as the nesting season for birds. But great horned owls nest in winter because young owls take a long time to grow up. This pair occupies a large stick nest in a tall cottonwood, a nest that red-tailed hawks built last year. The female great horned owl, which outweighs the male by a third, incubated her eggs for a full month, never leaving the nest. The male owl hunted for both. When the eggs hatched, the downy owlets were the size of newborn chickens. The male remained the sole provider for another 2 weeks until the young put on a second set of down feathers. Now, the young can be left alone while both adult great horned owls resume hunting at twilight. From elevated perches, they plunge with silent wings into prey below. They take mice, rabbits, and opossums, ducks and crows, even skunks and young raccoons. The young owls will remain with their parents for several months, and because the cycle started in winter, the young will have an abundance of prey when they are finally on their own. To see photos of great horned owls, come to birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Hey, Folkfest fans. KTOO wants your favorite festival-related photos for our public art show, Folk Life. How about that great picture of Buddy Tabor, a scene of kids dancing at Centennial Hall, a late-night jam session? You're invited to send us 3 images that will hang on our walls for the month of April. The show will be super simple, no frames. Just email your 3 images to arts@ktoo.org by March 30th, and we'll print and hang them. Details at ktoo.org.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Laura Statz has joined me to talk about the upcoming health fair this weekend. Laura, thanks so much for stopping in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And this is the, is it biannual, 2 times a year? How many? Spring and winter?
Oh, okay. Actually, that's kind of an interesting point here. Yeah, the Alaska Health Fair does a fall health fair here in Juneau, and actually the spring health fair that's happening tomorrow is sponsored by Bartlett Regional Hospital.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So there's fall and spring. That's great. I thought there was more than one a year. Yeah. So this is the time when you've got no excuse anymore. Go get yourself checked out. All those tests, all those things that you've been waiting on, now's the time to do it, right?
Right. Absolutely. Now, and actually there's more to the health fair than just your blood draw. So we all know the basic things. We know there's affordable blood draws. That's pretty standard. But this year and for the last 4 years, we've been adding classes, and I'm really super excited about those classes. And they're gaining momentum. And I would like to suggest to the listening audience, if they've already had their blood drawn in the fall, don't feel like they need it, there's these awesome classes that are free that they can go to.
Okay, so let's talk about those. They're all 45-minute. They're called, like, you're calling them mini classes here on
mini
the
classes,
flyer.
Yes.
Okay, so there's one that's about prediabetes.
Correct. So basic facts about prediabetes, which is a condition that, as it says, mm-hmm. it's a prediabetic condition.
So there's elevated blood sugar levels, those kinds of things.
Correct.
Yeah.
And when you're in the pre-diabetic range, you're moving towards diabetes. So you want to get a lot of information about how to prevent that. And this will be presented by Cynthia Nickerson, our certified diabetes educator.
Okay. And then this next one, healthy vision.
Right. Okay.
So that's an interesting one. Like if you... Maybe you don't already wear glasses, or maybe you do, or you think like you, oh, I know about that. Well, so what is, right. what's that idea about healthy vision?
Okay. Well, actually, it's about protecting your eyes in the digital age. That is what this
all
is going to be all
about. All those
blue
screens, all those
Yeah,
screens.
And actually that's presented by Cindy Cork, who's a optometrist, and she will be presenting that. Both those classes are at 9 a.m.
Okay, right. Those are the two 9 a.m. classes. Mm-hmm. Then there's two 10 a.m. classes. The first one's nutrition and gut microbiota.
Yes. Okay. Actually, yeah. How to feed your microbiota.
Biota. Sorry. Okay. Biota.
Yeah.
Okay.
Biota. Actually, so... we know this is kind of cutting edge stuff. I love it. We know the human biome. There's a lot of bacteria on our skin everywhere and in our gut. And they're really finding that the healthier our gut is, the healthier we are overall. So there's been a lot of attention on that. And Carrie Natwick, our she's actually a director of nutritional services at Bartlett Regional Hospital. She is a registered dietitian who will be presenting this really hot and cutting edge topic. And actually, I wish I could go to this.
I know. This one is interesting, right? Yeah.
And then, they're all interesting.
Yeah. Hands only CPR is the next one. So,
right.
What is that hands only CPR?
Okay.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
This will be presented. By our Alaska Airlift Northwest Medevac service. And, okay, so what they're finding is if you see someone go down, don't worry about anything but giving good, strong compressions. Don't worry about mouth-to-mouth.
Oh, so you're not,
don't worry about
right, okay.
anything like that. Because what they've found are a couple things. People kind of go, I don't know if I want to do mouth-to-mouth. And sometimes that's a barrier. People don't start acting. The other thing they've found in research, and it's in the literature, is that basically if someone goes down, the most important thing to do is to just give the compressions hard and fast, and that will really increase survival rates.
And just getting good, proper training on how to do that is really important, right? Because if you're not doing it right, you're really not helping a lot.
Yeah.
In a way, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Of course. And and it's a pretty simple thing to learn. And and actually what's going on right now in town is the middle schools are being taught hands-only CPR, and it was instigated by a gal who's doing her silver badge for Girl Scouts, but So that's really exciting.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, and then next, the importance of posture.
Okay.
All right.
This is Dr. Bostrop. He has been coming to our health fairs for years, and he's been, this is the fourth year he's teaching classes. And yeah, he just goes into, you know, what can be more basic than our posture.
Yeah, right.
And truly, it is one of those things that we don't pay attention to, but when you do, you feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether you learn it in yoga or whether it's a presentation, being mindful of, you know, how you're holding your body is very important.
And this other class that's happening at 11 a.m. is called Smart Goals to Achieve Physical Activity.
Right.
So that's an interesting thing. I think so often we live in a society that sort of places so much importance behind a perfect appearance, you know, these amazing athletes, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it can be very intimidating, I think, to just get active, to just be physically active to the point of being healthful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of an interesting take on it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Keegan Carroll will be presenting this. She's at Pavitt's Health and Fitness. And yeah, it's about, okay, you're going to might have to help me on this. So SMART stands for specific, measurable, attainable.
Reliable?
No, it's not reliable. Oh, shoot.
Rememberable?
Oh, you know what? No, I can't.
I don't know.
Shoot. I never should have gotten into that.
SMART goals.
Yeah. Anyway, they are specific, measurable, attainable, R and T.
Repeatable?
Anyway, let's just move on.
I like that. I like trying to remember it. That's good. Okay, so that's
so
what's going
sorry.
On at 11. So those are the mini classes.
Right.
And then I just want to make sure people are kind of reminded of the other, when we do talk about blood tests.
Yes.
So there's the comprehensive test, but there's other ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, there are. There are the vitamin D.
Right.
Okay.
So that's something that's specific to our area and something
to
keep in mind, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The thyroid screening hormone. So, you know, if your doctor says, geez, you know, I've been watching your thyroid, you know, you might want to get your thyroid tested. So the A1C is actually a test. You do not have to. This is a fasting blood draw. Anyway, and the A1C actually is a blood test that averages your blood sugar over a three-month period, and it comes up with a number called the A1C. There's the...
So when you said this is a fasting blood test, for all the blood tests that are being taken tomorrow, you're asking people to fast?
You fast for the comprehensive blood test.
Okay.
I don't want to get this confusing.
Yeah.
Basically, just try to fast 8 to 10 hours. The thyroid stimulating, the A1C, the PSA, the vitamin D, you do not have to.
Okay.
You don't have to fast for those.
Okay. But if you're going to do the comprehensive one, essentially don't eat breakfast.
And, or drink coffee with anything in it.
Right.
Just drink a lot of water. That's the other really super important message is drink water. Because if you're dehydrated and you go get your blood drawn, your veins are flat.
Yeah, yeah.
So please, everyone, drink a lot of water.
Starting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, going until noon, it's at Thunder Mountain High School.
You're right.
And it's the Juneau Community Health Fair.
Right.
Thanks so much, Laura, for letting us know about it.
Okay.
All right.
Happy
I know you're heading out right now to go set it up, right?
Right. So, that's right. Exactly true.
Very good. All right. Thanks again.
Okay. Thank you.
The station is supported by Breezen, carrying a variety of sandwiches, fresh baked bread, and pastries. Chef Moorhead offers daily changing menu choices for takeout and catering for special events and parties. More information at breezen.com.
What a beautiful face I have found in this place that is circling all around the sun. What a beautiful dream that could flash on the screen in a blink of an eye and be gone from me. soft and sweet. Let me hold it close and keep it here with me. And one day we will die and our ashes will fly from the aeroplane over the sea. But for now we are young, let us lay in the sun and count every beautiful thing we can see. Love to be in the arms of all I'm keeping here with me.
Now, we're calling an audible here. We're going in hot here.
Hello.
How you doing? We're here to we're going to talk K2 things. Should we talk
great.
K2 things? Does
let's
that sound good?
Let's talk about K2.
Don't we always want to talk K2?
We had a couple of our guests that were supposed to come in didn't show, so let's talk K2 things. So what's happening?
So we've got a pretty exciting First Friday on April 6th happening. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it.
Kombucha. It's a new thing.
Kombucha.
It's a new thing? I know kombucha.
It's a new...
A lot of people are into it.
Getting into it.
Yeah. And
It involves the mother. Right.
I'm still learning about it, but Alaska Probiotics is going to come in and do a kombucha tasting on April 6th.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then we also have the photo show.
Yes. And if you go online to ktuo.org, there's a little calendar piece on there. You can click on it. We're taking submissions for Folkfest photography, and then there's going to be a big exhibit here on the 6th.
Very cool.
Along with kombucha tasting and live music.
Live music as
live
well.
Music.
It's all happening.
It's all happening.
So
here.
I think
this
also.
Is all when is it all happening?
April 6th.
April 6th, the first Friday in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think also because we tried this format of a photo exhibit out with like staff photos. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think there are a lot of people out there that are wildly talented. And now Folkfest is coming up and we're all getting geared up for that and excited.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you have, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that have just the beautiful photos of, you know, a stage act or, you know, a shot, a really scenic shot of like something on the side in a bar where there's a band playing. Those kind of photos is, I think, what we're looking for. And just featuring those in a real awesome exhibit. And they don't have to print them. We take care of that. They just have to send them to us in electronic format. And then they'll be featured in the photo show.
It makes so much sense, too, because K2 has such a strong history and long history with the Folkfest, right?
It's true. We broadcast it.
Yeah.
And we also do the live webcast, so you can watch it at karenin.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then also listen on Karenin. So, yeah.
It's a way a lot of people connect to the Folkfest, even if they're not necessarily able to go to all the performances or have to skip a couple nights. They can stay in touch, figure out what's going on.
Right.
I live downtown, so often I'll listen for the intro and then just go, I'm going to go see
and
this.
And then when it's your cue, make your way down.
And I catch the last two songs of the set.
So. And I was just thinking, we do have some other stuff coming up.
Oh, yeah.
It's all happening now. Mm-hmm. Now it's triggered my brain.
Now you're thinking, what else?
We're having, also inspired by our Folkfest, we are having an art glasses at TK McGuire's. That is our collaborative event that we do with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. So we're doing floral crowns with Martha's Flowers. So you can come, make your floral crown, and then wear it on over to Centennial Hall. But it should be a lot of fun. Tickets are going to go on sale in about 2 weeks. So check the website at ktoo.org and also the Jack's website. We'll have some information there.
And did you just do one of these?
We did a really cool one, I was at Paula Poundstone. It was with Sarah Ritter from Bronze Betty Finery, and they were sending
jewelry.
me pictures, and it was super cool. And then final product, you know, she's got such an amazing aesthetic, and I love that she was, like, willing to kind of, like, share that and then let people put their own kind of mark on it, which is what she did. So everybody got to make a pair of earrings.
So that's Art Glass is a monthly collaboration between KTO and the Jack, and it's like small classes, always crafty, artsy, great group dynamics, and, you know, talks.
There's
and
also
like...
always adult beverages.
Okay.
So nobody should ever feel, you know... embarrassed or anything. It's fun. It's not
all
like serious.
Inhibitions are checked at the door.
That's right. Yeah. We're like, you can have some snacks.
Right.
You can have some drinks, and it's more relaxed.
Yeah,
and you get to meet new people.
Done at either a retail location, or you did one out at the brewery one time.
We did.
You did the
which
painted
was awesome.
Growlers. That was really fun. That
was
Hannah
really
did.
Fun. Yeah.
And so that's a really cool thing that you guys have got going on every.
Second Thursday of every month.
All right.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So that's happening. Art classes.
April 12th.
All right. Mm-hmm. Anything else going on? Anything happening in, well...
I think we should talk about, real quickly say thank you to everyone that came to Paula Poundstone.
Thank you.
Things and say thank you for the community for supporting us and coming out. And, you know, I think it was a lot of fun. She apparently had a lot of fun. She talked a lot about it. And So we really want to say thank you to the community for coming out in such big forces. We sold over 1,000 tickets, which is pretty amazing.
That's huge.
And is there maybe a little bit of a feedback loop on people maybe requesting, hey, here's another idea for someone you might be able to bring in?
I don't know if
like
you've
that.
Seen it. So
it was a Facebook post.
GM of Arts and Culture put it out on
put
Facebook.
It out there.
She's like, tell us who you want us to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a really incredible list, like great responses. So she's like diligently like looking into things.
Very
so
cool.
Yeah.
We have our own secret lists, I think.
We do have
yeah.
an internal list. Yeah. I want a chef. I want to bring a chef.
I know
here.
You do.
That would be fun.
It would be so
right?
fun, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not going to, like, go that big. Like, I want Bourdain, but I'll take anybody that can cook.
I want Bourdain.
I know. That's who I'd love.
Has
but
he been
we,
up?
We do have other.
I don't know if he's ever
I don't think he has been, though. But
he
we do.
To.
We are working on other things. We will have someone else from, hopefully, from NPR that's not official yet. Up here in May, I think. So stay tuned
cool.
for that.
It's a teaser.
All right.
Yeah, that's my teaser. So we're working diligently to bringing you national NPR to Juno.
Should that's cool.
We're a destination.
Yeah. Just a reporter.
My lips are sealed. It's not going to be a chef. I can say that much.
Oh, it's not a chef. They probably cook.
Is there an NPR chef?
You might
chef?
Be able to. It's
yeah,
a splendid
so.
Table
no.
or whatever.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
there's a new.
Go.
She retired, but there's a new Splendid Table person,
yeah.
isn't there? Yeah, right.
What's the name?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. We should know this.
I don't know. This is your area. I just volunteer here.
And we did actually also, I don't know if people saw that. I don't think we talked about that a lot, is we adjusted the programming on the weekends.
Oh, yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. And, you know, that's always something that people are, especially
people,
if they're set in their ways.
Yeah.
So Weekend Edition now also on, you know, the usual schedule, like the evening, right? All things considered.
Yes.
Is 4:00.
Yep. On Saturday.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. On KTOO.
Yes.
It used to be the spot for the show previously known as Prairie Home Companion, right?
Right.
Right.
Which
right.
is now?
Here Now or something like that?
Live Now? Now. No. Live Here.
So this is the issue.
With Chris.
Right? This is what's going on.
It's also Friday.
It's Friday.
We have zero brain power.
I know.
Right
so
we're
bear
trying.
With
but
us.
That is the thing. Like, as shows change and as different demographics for shows, the ways, you know, people are expecting different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much content that's available to K2
oh, yeah.
mm-hmm.
to be able to work with. And KTOO, KRNN, KXLL are always trying to balance having those local programming with all of the great available national shows that you could just put on all the time anyway.
Right.
So it's fun to think about the idea of, hey, we're always looking at that schedule, always trying to figure out how to make it work better for people, you know,
yeah.
and that there's these great shows that are out there all the time. We all listen to our podcasts and all that stuff as well,
oh, yeah.
and it's fun to bring that on the air.
It's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for jumping in.
Absolutely.
Andy,
letting us know here what's happening at K2. There's always so much going on. It's fun to hear about these cooperative efforts between the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and K2.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool thing.
It's been
really
such
cool
a great
thing.
Partnership. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, they've been really successful. We're really, really happy. And I'll give a teaser. We're already talking next season, and we're gonna expand our horizons. We might be going a little like lifestyle route. I don't know. We're in talks right now.
I don't even know what that means, but I like it.
It's exciting.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in and talking all things radio with us.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And I just wanted to let you know about a couple of other fun things that are going on here this weekend. Of course, St. Patrick's Day is coming up, and there's a Blarney Stone party happening, and Sham Jam is happening, all kinds of fun parties and things like that happening. But also tomorrow, there's a couple of things happening with the Princess Sophia project that's happening. So first, Katie Giorgio is going to be presenting on Orpheus Project's Princess Sophia Opera as part of the City Museum's ongoing Coffee and Collections series. That's happening tomorrow from 10:30 to noon over at the SLAM at the City Museum, and she's going to be doing that there. And then the performance for the Princess Sophia Opera is going to be tomorrow, 2 p.m., at the APK building, the SLAM building. And that's happening all tomorrow there over at the SLAM. Also coming up in a couple of weeks, there's the 49 Writers Generative Writing Retreat. So the idea there is to get away and use the collective energy of fellow writers and share and workshop opportunities. The cost for that's going to be $125 per person. And it's happening April 6th through the 8th You can find out more at http://shrineofstteresa.org. Registration deadline is March 21st, so sign up for that. Well, thanks for listening to Juno Afternoon, everyone, for this Friday. I'm Andy Klein, and have a great weekend.